even from the first time I put the first prototype, which was essentially toilet paper rolls and a, like, you know, just a baseball cap full of like electronics. And I realized this, that's when I realized these two worlds came together. One, like the comfort aspect of lying in bed reading. And then two, you know, this nicotine gum idea of like, well, where are we going to go with personal computing devices? And I really do think that this is better for humanity if we figure out how to provide other options besides just my iPhone for personal computing. And that's what drew me back in.
This Week in Startups is brought to you by .tech Domains has a new program called Startups.tech, where you can get your startup featured on This Week in Startups. Go to startups.tech/Jason to find out how. Crowdbotics. Great ideas can change the world, and Crowdbotics is the fastest way to turn those ideas into code. Get a free scoping session for your next big app idea at crowdbotics.com/twist. And Issue is the all-in-one platform for creating and distributing beautiful digital content. Get started with Issue today for free, or sign up for an annual premium account and get 50% off when you go to issue.com/podcast and use promo code TWIST. That's issuu.com/podcast and use promo code TWIST.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the program. I was on the Twitter and I saw a really creative idea go by and I said, get me this person for the podcast. And that idea was a pair of glasses that are essentially a Kindle in sunglasses format. And the company's name is Sol, S-O-L. And the founder's name is Ben Chelf.
That's right.
I got it right. Okay, great.
You got it right.
C-H-E-L-F. And I see my friend Gary Tan, shout out to Posterous, led the $5 million seed round, I assume when he was at Initialized back in the day.
Correct. Yep. Before he went to Y Combinator.
And he tweeted it and said that it was a really cool idea. So tell me, welcome to the program.
Thank you,
tell
Jason, for having
audience
me.
What you're building and why we need an e-reader in the form of glasses.
Yeah. Well, as you said, we are building the world's first wearable e-reader. It provides you a completely immersive reading experience. And the two pillars for that reading experience to be immersive, it has to be really comfortable and it has to be distraction-free. So the, you know, I'd say the entry level, you know, obvious pitch use case is you don't have to hold the book. You lie in bed completely comfortable. You're on the couch, you're on the beach, whatever. You don't have to hold the book. You have a little remote in your hand to turn the page, much like you would turn the page with a big button on a presentation clicker. And it's a really comfortable way to read. The other aspect of this, the distraction-free aspect of this, has to do with the bigger narrative that we think is happening in tech and specifically in personal devices. And namely, the fact that we're distracted a lot. Yeah. You know, you pull out your iPhone all the time, your smartphone all the time, you got a bunch of notifications, maybe some of it's work, maybe some of it's social. It's just a cacophony of noise in our heads. And reading is essentially, the act of reading requires a different kind of focus. So when we try to engage in a deeper activity like reading, it's really hard to do that on our phones. And we argue it's even hard to do that on traditional e-readers because the phone is still right there in your pocket. You're tempted to pull it out if there's a break in the action in the book. I'm sure you've experienced that. I'm sure your listeners have experienced this.
It when you go to the movies. And in a movie theater, the director's like, you know what I would love to do is give you an incredibly beautiful shot that, you know, cost $1 million to make. And you're like, oh, you're not talking and nothing's blowing up. Let me check my Twitter feed. And
precisely,
of course, or my iMessage or Signal or whatever you're on. So I guess, you know, a demo is worth a billion words.
Sure.
I'd love for you to demo this for us. And I don't know if you have a prototype there where you could show people the profile of it.
Yeah, of course. Well, I can hold up the one I read on every night, which is my unit.
Oh, wow. So prototype is working. It's not a prototype.
Yeah. It's
an actual product. It's
a product. It's coming this fall. And
hold it
but
up
what
for a second
I'll
there and just show us a little bit. It looks, for people who are watching, looking at it, it's looks like a chunky pair of sunglasses. The stems, or what do you call the things that go over your ear?
Yeah, temples.
Temples. Okay. So those are a little bit thicker. I assume it has batteries in there or something?
Correct. Yep.
Okay.
Battery in each side.
Great. And then the, instead of just having glass there, they look a little bit more like goggles. Or binoculars even. So what is that component, I guess? And then also there looks like there's buttons on the side. Is that left and right or something? Turn the page?
No buttons on the device, but I'll describe a little bit of the features. And so you asked about the lenses. The lenses are what's called a pancake lens. It provides a lot of magnification in a very short, you know, Z-axis throw, which is why we can get them to be thinner than, you know, say a full headset or big thing that you would have to put a strap behind your head for. The nose bridge is adjustable so that you can, you know, kind of mold it like Gumby style to your nose. And then what you see here on the top is adjustment for what's called the interpupillary distance, or the distance between the pupils of your eyes, to, you know, ensure maximum comfort. You also mentioned binoculars. They do have the functionality to turn each lens similar to a binoculars for diopter adjustment, so that, you know, if you have a prescription that you need to adjust for, you don't have to wear your glasses or contacts, or most people don't have to wear glasses or contacts while they're
beautiful. What is that going to cost, $500 or something?
$350.
Oh, okay. Wow. That's a pretty low. So you don't make any money on the hardware, or barely?
Well, we at scale, we will make money on the hardware, actually. Okay. And some of that has to do with the technical decisions we made to get really long battery life, really light form factor. It's much more, we call it, it's closer to an IoT type device than it is a full computer on your face like others are building.
Got it. So because you're using an e-reader technology, it's not going to be playing a movie ever. You don't need to have some crazy OLED device.
Right.
And that would burn your battery out. You don't need to have a sick processor. What kind of processor do you run this off of?
Get this. Dual core 240 megahertz processor. Straight out of the late 90s.
Wow. I was about to say, like, can you still buy those?
Yeah. Well, in fact, yes, because of the IoT, they're just tiny, tiny little packages that are, you know, 7 millimeters by 7 millimeters. And so, yeah, the whole thing's built around long battery life and really lightweight form.
And what would you get in terms of battery life here, in terms of reading?
25 hours continuous reading in low light conditions. So much more like a traditional e-reader.
Wow. So if you were trying to read a really long Stephen King book, you might even be able to do it with this reader. So you were going to demo a little bit. When I saw, I looked at your webpage before I invited John as a guest, it looked like the text was a little bit pixelated. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't sure if that was a stylistic choice or something, but what does it look like when you're looking at it? Am I looking at a giant page? Am I looking at a sentence? Is it wrapping with 4 words or 10?
Yeah.
I'm curious about how that would visually look.
Yeah. Would you like me to share that previous?
Oh, sure. Let's do the share screen. Yeah.
Great. So we talked about the glasses already. So I'll go straight to this navigation video. And for those who are just listening, this is a video that's zooming in on the text. It shows a bit of the navigation between the various books that might be on your device, and then goes in and shows you a page of text at a time. And to your question, this is a render. It is very accurate in terms of, you know, dimensionally and number of pixels. Mm-hmm. But what you don't get here is you don't get what e-ink actually looks and feels like. Which, because it's you know, it is not precise pixels. Each capsule is what they call it. Each capsule essentially kind of has a little bleed to it. So where you see sharper pixelated edges here, those are a lot softer when you're looking the text of the device.
I had a feeling it was the emulator or whatever you're using.
Yeah, that
makes it look a little old school.
Right,
But what's really interesting there, am I correct, though, when you went to the articles that you're pulling up, you plan to pull up RSS feeds or something?
Yeah, so we're working on integrations right now with those types of stuff. Right now we can part of my goal is to get people out of their inbox for a lot of these things that should be consumed in a different type of format. And so, you know, set up filters, auto forward your daily news drips, whether it come from Substack or specific publications. Thinking about how do you connect with other news feeds. And
so you could forward to an email address. Like you can do with your Kindle, like they'll give you a secret email address to send a PDF. So you can forward your favorite Substack or Axios or Inside Newsletter, whatever.
Well, and basically what I do every day now. Yep.
Oh, wow. And then you have to, of course, figure out the formatting because you just need plain text, and things are always coming in HTML now. So that's a little bit of a technical challenge.
You'd think, but guess what's happened in the last 9 months that makes that extremely easy for us?
Apple's new product?
Nope. It's all LLM processed. It's like this. The LLM takes everything and just does the right work. In fact, we get a couple of other great features from the LLM. For example, if you got, say, 30 minutes a day of your normal news drips, but you don't have 30 minutes, we also give you the 5-minute summary that just summarizes all of it.
So you can say, hey, send me Casey Newton's, 1,000 words, but give me a 100-word version of it. That's
exactly.
Very nice.
Or like, say you're a few days away from the most recent reading session in your novel, and you've kind of forgot where you were. It just gives you the summary of your last reading session. It's like the LLMs are so great for a reading tech company like us, because it's all text and processing.
That's a killer feature, a catch me up feature. Yeah, I forgot where I was at. Give me a little summary of what I've already read. Yeah. Well, let me ask you a question about that. And about just generally ebooks. So you can get ebooks that are not protected. I guess there's like EPUB or something is the file EPUB format.
Is a typical,
But a lot of these are owned by the Kindle and Amazon. So if I got a whole library on my Kindle and they DRM it up, I believe. So it's got all this digital rights management, I'm screwed. So you're going to have another bookstore and you have to do all these deals with all the publishers all over again to get these to my device?
Yeah, we're working on the content partnerships now. Now, of course, we're, 16, 17 years into the e-reader world. So it is not as complicated as it was 20 years ago to kind of aggregate and build your own marketplace. And a lot of, Amazon has their own DRM, but then, there's an Adobe DRM that is kind of more generally used by a lot of different providers. So once you plug into that Adobe DRM system. So yeah, we're working through all those details, but we anticipate a marketplace
very similar.
Can't you just partner
with some existing bookstore in the world and just get it all done? Yeah. Okay.
Basically,
so that's not announced yet. I take it you're working on that.
Correct. Yeah,
got it. Okay. That'd be amazing if Amazon would just let you send my Kindle stuff over.
That would be up to them.
Well, and they also could be sharp-elbowed about it because they could see this as competition. And I think, this is why the Justice Department, not to make this a political thing or whatever, the Justice Department is looking at big tech and saying, like, interoperability. And this is one of the reasons I was critical of Lina Khan, our new head over there, because she wants to stop, Facebook from buying, a VR app when really interoperability and forcing Facebook or forcing Apple to allow a third-party app store or forcing Amazon to allow other devices to get Kindle books, that's a much better use of her time. And I think it's like very ineffective what she's doing in terms of blocking acquisitions. I think it's like it's futile and it's like skating to where the puck has already been. So the puck's not there anymore, but
Well, as I'm sure you can appreciate as a startup, we're not quite to the scale of having our lobbyists angle for us in the right direction.
No, exactly.
But we'll have these conversations and, we'll hope that partnerships can emerge as it is a new category that, others haven't anticipated yet.
.tech Domains is introducing a new program. It's called Startups.tech. Let me break it down for you. Imagine you're a startup building on a nice .tech domain name and you got some traction. But now you need a little kick to boost your growth. Well, I might have a solution for you. Basically, they're going to start featuring startups building with a .tech domain name every week in the .tech ad read here. So today's startup is called Cody.tech, and they're coming to us from Tel Aviv. And you can think of Cody.tech as Duolingo for learning to code. The founders had a frustrating experience while they were learning to code online. So they solved their own problem by creating a solution that helps you learn, stay engaged, and avoid burnout. The company was founded a year ago and already has about 30,000 users. You can check them out at Cody.tech. That's with two Ds, Cody.tech, huh? The .tech domain name. Getting Cody.tech. Free promo here on This Week in Startups. Very gracious of the .tech team. So if you want to get your startup featured during an ad read for .tech domains, go to startups.tech/Jason to learn more. That's startups, plural, .tech/Jason. What a great domain name. Don't wait and go now to startups.tech/Jason today. Running a hardware startup is brutally hard. Yep. Explain to people exactly how hard it is to run one of these companies and why, and how you've mitigated against just the brutality of hardware startups.
Sure. Yeah, so hardware is definitely startup on hard mode, and then some. And a lot of it has to do with, one, there's obviously a business model. You have to build a physical thing. That has a certain cost to it. You don't necessarily get the same kind of margins as you would by, doing enterprise SaaS, et cetera. There is just some business model stuff that you have to think about and really be conscious of what is going to be my overall bomb from day one, right? And so
build
we're thinking about
materials.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. The bill of materials, the total cost of every little piece and part, whether it be electronic or plastic or optics or whatnot, that goes into the final product.
Yeah.
And so that's one business model challenge. Then there's just the practical challenge of coordinating and examining the trade-offs between every software decision you make, every mechanical decision you make, in our case, every optical decision you make in terms of lens technology, every electrical decision you make around the different chips that you pick and the different, you know, and everyone has a trade-off in terms of speed, performance, otherwise, and, you know, size, battery consumption, power consumption, and, you know, weight, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So it is a challenge. It is hard. Part of the reason I enjoy it, and this is my first hardware startup, but part of the reason I enjoy it is it's like the best min-max optimization problem ever, right? Because you have all these different challenges coming at you, and you get to sort through that. Now, in terms of how you navigate it, my CTO and I, we talk a lot about this. Starting at this type of startup is not something you probably want a bunch of people who are right out of college to do. This is my third startup. I was an investor for a while in between there. My CTO has been at a number of startups. Our head of hardware, you know, he's been in his career for 30 years. Our head of manufacturing has been in her career for 30 years. So you assemble a team that has just stood up, you know, physical things many, many times. So in terms of having the relationships with the contract manufacturers who are making various aspects of the parts, figuring out, you know, how do you go from prototype to manufacturing. I think, you know, Elon Musk in the recent investor meeting talked about how hard or how easy it is to build a prototype, how hard it is to, you know, actually build at scale, and then how impossible it is to build at scale profitably, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, we rely on that expertise of our team to be able to go from the prototype phase into this, you know, scaling phase as we're doing now.
Yeah. And there's something about like whatever component is the least reliable, or the least available, the furthest behind in delivery, that defines when you ship.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, it's so brutal.
Yep.
Which is why Elon, I've had many conversations with him about it. So much of the Model Y, Model 3, he makes himself now. And so if you look at Mercedes, they were talking about their software issues. And, you know, GM's talked about this before. Every single component in their car has its own software, whether it's the seats, the heating and the HVAC, the entertainment, the navigation system, and then they have to figure out how to get all those things to talk to each other. Whereas in a Tesla, it's one set, and then they even make their HVAC now. If you bought the original Model S, it was the steering column from Mercedes, I believe, and the shifter. Huh. So if you were in a Mercedes and then you got a Tesla, you're like, wait a second, this shifter looks exactly the same. And it was, right? And Mercedes was an original investor. And so, you know, and now the screen from the Model 3 is the same screen in the Model S and the Model X. They moved that screen over. So they have one screen for all cars, right? Instead of two or three. Is there a subscription to this thing? Because that's the other problem is it's a one-time purchase. And the better job you do in making it reliable and making it sturdy and maybe having good specs, the longer people can use it, which is great for them, but it's bad for you.
Yeah, right. So we decided, we debated this in the early days of, you know, what is the right model for getting it in the market. We thought about maybe even just a lease model for the hardware itself.
Sure.
But we decided for V1, we're just going to go with kind of what people are used to, which is I buy the thing, I own the thing.
Yeah.
And so that's what we're doing for V1. And we were able to get that cost of goods down to what we felt was a reasonable place to charge people $350 for it. That's we felt comfortable doing that. It's still an open question as to what we end up doing on the, you know, overall content side of things in year one, year two, year three. Is that a purchase by purchase? Is there some subscription for, you know, connection to various news outlets or some aggregation or additional features like some of these LLM features that I'm talking about? You know, maybe there are ways to kind of add on from there. But honestly, as a startup, you know, our first focus is how do we get this reading experience to be really, really great? And that has to do with the hardware and the form factor, but then also the software and then making it work. And we do that right, and people love reading on the thing, and then we'll have a lot of options from there.
Be amazing for the New York Times, which is doing just gangbusters with their subscription business. They decided, hey, we're going to get rid of advertising. Not get rid of it, but we're going to... At the peak of their advertising powers, they said, you know what we should do is build a foundation here of subscriptions. And now they're a subscription juggernaut. Mm-hmm. And consumers are pretty good with it. Imagine if you bought a 3-year subscription to the New York Times in advance, you got one of these. So, mm-hmm. you know, what does the New York Times cost? Like $200 a year or something? If they said to you, you know, hey, give us $500, we'll throw in one of these. And then you just cut some deal with them. And then you had the whole New York Times on there. What a great deal. So I think there's some option here for this to be very powerful. Or one of the book publishers, you know, your Harper, mm-hmm. Harper Business, they have a great label of business books. And yep. if they said, hey, we'll give you 10 books a year for 3 years, you get 30 of our books and this for $500, I'd buy that, you know?
Yep. Yep.
One thing that the Kindle has added, mm-hmm. which will be your number one competitor, or they'll see you as a competitor, I guess, because if you use this, you're not going to use your Kindle. If you succeed, mm-hmm. You're only going to bring one with you when you go to Italy this summer. If you succeed, they have something called Whisper Sync, I think. No, not Whisper Sync. Mm-hmm. There's something that connects the audiobook to the...
Oh, right. Yeah.
To the words. And so I have dyslexia, I found out mm-hmm. later in life. And so reading pretty hard for me, listening to audiobooks really easy. But yep. if I buy the book twice, which I've done like a dozen times now,
yeah.
where I buy the audiobook and I buy the other book, so I pay $30, 15 each mm-hmm. time or whatever. And I don't know if that Whisper Sync is how you deliver it, but it will highlight the word and speak it to you. Have you considered adding audio here, because it is over your ear. Mm-hmm. And I have a pair of the Bose headsets, which I love.
Yep.
And the Bose headsets, highly recommend them, will let you listen to music or an audiobook, but your ear's not covered. So yep. I would love to have it, you know, do that syncing for me.
Yeah. So not a V1 feature, but like top of the request list from most people that have have used it. Yeah, we hear that one. It's almost the first thing that comes to people's mind is I'd love to be able to read and listen simultaneously. And you know, the good news for us is, yeah, speakers are small. They're low power audio is low power consumption. So in terms of kind of meeting what we think are the core constraints that we want to hold throughout the life of this product line, it is something that we'll absolutely be prototyping for V2. And one of the things that we're even putting in V1 is an autopilot mode where you don't even have to manually turn the page. It can essentially walk your eyes through the text line at a time. And so we anticipate that, you know, that combined with audio in a future version would be just a ticket, right?
It is called Whisper Sync. It's called Whisper Sync for voice. Oh, okay. It's got its own, and they call that immersive reading. What I found is when you do that, you really increase your, retention.
Yeah.
Another possibility is, hey, you put this on and you listen to This Week in Startups or All In, whatever your favorite pod is, and then it transcribes it and you see the text of what everybody's saying in front of you. That could be quite powerful too. Have you considered that?
No, we haven't really thought about like the pod, you know, going into the transcription realm, but I like that idea. That's definitely something that we should put on list. And again, LLMs would probably be pretty helpful. Yeah, I would maybe in terms of...
Well, you have a table of contents. You could summarize the episode and then it doesn't have a microphone in it yet, no?
Right, correct.
Okay. So yeah, I mean, a 1.0, just reading, but you can imagine in the 2.0, if it had a microphone in that, you could have voice commands.
Yep.
Pretty amazing. And now you're taking pre-orders for $350 right now.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And there's a lot of demand. So right now we're taking wait lists. But
oh,
yes.
really? When you do something like this, how big of a first batch do you do? And how does that work as a hardware startup? How do you optimize that? Do you try to order 100,000 or just 1,000 because there could be mistakes and you don't want to put a bad product out there? How do you think
that? That's right. You know, we're being very measured in our approach. We understand there's going to be a lot of demand for this, but we want to keep a really high quality bar. Mm. So the initial runs are in the thousands, tens of thousands, while we, you know, ensure that everything from a manufacturing standpoint is spot on. As our head of manufacturing constantly reminds me, like, you don't want to make a mistake at scale a million. You want to make it at a scale 100 or 1,000 first. And so that's what this year has been all about. You know, we're shipping out our kind of final beta units to our, you know, beta folks in the next few weeks.
Thank you for putting me on the list. I appreciate that.
We'll do what we can, Jason.
You always want to have an influencer with 700,000. I got more followers than Gary Tan. He's an investor.
Okay. All right.
He doesn't have the two top podcasts in tech. And, you know, just saying. Gary's great, but...
So yeah, that's coming out pretty soon. And again, assuming, you know, that's been a great learning experience to dial in a lot of that manufacturing process. And then we roll right in from that into, you know, production later this fall and start to fulfill that wait list and pre-orders.
You said you were a VC before this for a little bit.
Yeah.
How long did you spend in venture capital? And then why'd you quit VC to go back to startups?
Yeah. It was about 6 years. Did one fund a cycle, right? Which I loved. I'd done a couple of startups before that. I loved the variety. I loved the, you get to interact with so many brilliant people with brilliant ideas and a lot of passion for it. And truly, I didn't know if I would do another startup. But one of the things that I have been thinking about pretty much that entire time is what our relationship with devices is, and read a lot of books like, you know, Sherry Turkle's Alone Together in terms of what our devices are doing to us and, you know, the kind of traditional stuff, Cal Newport, Deep Work, like, really thinking about how our brains have been rewired by these
devices.
How
have they been rewired?
Well, yeah, I think our attentions are shorter. I think it's harder for us to concentrate on long form. And you know, I'm an optimist. I think there is a path through, obviously. But I think one of the things that happens when I pick up a device is my brain is wired to kind of be in this multitasking mode of what's the next input? What's the next dopamine hit? So I was just wondering what is the path through that with respect to our relationship with personal computing, if this isn't the best thing for our minds. And a lot of the, if you will, state of the art thinking on that is essentially just, well, be more disciplined, take a digital detox, put your phone somewhere else.
Yeah.
And stop
taking heroin. Here's how you can not be a junkie. Stop taking heroin. And you're like,
that's right.
But I love heroin. I love Twitter. I love my group chats.
That's right. That's right.
I love TikTok and YouTube videos.
You know, one of the things we talk about is we think that there is broccoli on the internet. Like, there are really good things in Twitter, but then it's kind of also a wash, and a lot of stuff is just not the best. And you don't necessarily want to be doom scrolling before bed or whatnot. And so we do think of ourselves a little bit as the nicotine gum for the digital age.
All right. We all know the one thing that separates great startups from the good ones is product velocity. What does it mean? Product velocity, fancy term, right? You got your product and you have velocity, speed, the speed in which your product improves. So can you ship updates? Can you release new features? Can you do bug fixes? Can you iterate on the interface? Can you solve problems for your customers? And can you do it quickly? Because you're not alone. You have competitors and your customers have choices. They may solve their problems by writing their own custom code, or they might use your solution. This is what startups are about. How fast can you get that product velocity going? And so, you know, how do you supercharge it? Everybody says, okay, yeah, we want to go faster, but you got to go faster intelligently. And Crowdbotix is going to help you do that. They're your CTO as a service. Basically, they provide you with the most optimal architecture to get your product to market as fast as possible. You'll have access to an on-demand product manager and developer talent, and they will help get your app into production 10 times faster than conventional development. Crowdbotix can work with your in-house dev team, or you can just have them work independently. And you own all the IP, you own all the source code. Let the folks at Crowdbotix supercharge your product velocity today. No more waiting. Get a free build plan at crowdbotix.com/twist. That's a $4.99 value just for the Twist listeners. You get that for free. That's CROWDBOTICS.com/twist for a free build plan.
So since I had been thinking about this problem for quite some time, this idea of what building a wearable e-reader, kind of the origin story there, wasn't my idea. It was one of my co-founder's ideas in conversation with Palmer Luckey, who's, you know, the Oculus founder. And
yeah,
and
good friend of mine.
Yeah. Right. But, yeah, good one. Good one.
Okay, yeah. I'll be here for three more nights. Try the deal.
There you go. There you go.
Tip your winners.
So it kind of just discussing the state of AR, VR and realizing that if you wanted a really satisfying form factor, it would have to be more specific purpose, more single purpose, less general, less trying to render 3D worlds or put an iPhone on your face. And that's where we got to this idea of, wow, it would be really great to read with a headset if we could make it light enough and whatnot. Before I dove all the way in to start the business, I did some prototyping. I did the tinkering in the garage, if you will, with some friends. And even from the first time I put the first prototype, which was essentially toilet paper rolls and just a baseball cap full of like electronics. And I realized this, that's when I realized these two worlds came together. One, like the comfort aspect of lying in bed reading. And then two, this nicotine gum idea of like, well, where are we going to go with personal computing devices? And I really do think that this is better for humanity if we figure out how to provide other options besides just my iPhone for personal computing. And that's what drew me back in.
I mean, if you think, and Sherry Turkle talks about this in her book, but just the need for downtime, the need for solitude or reflection, it's kind of gone. And we're so addicted to these devices that you don't have boredom kick in. And if you think about children, you know, sometimes what happens when you get immersed in a book is you kind of get into that world, you get transported, and you get to live in that environment for a little while. When I would read Michael Crichton's novels, I had that experience of just being lost in them, right? Or if you were to read Charles Dickens, you can just be transformed into, you know, to Alice's Cities or something like that. They don't get to have that experience, and it's a lost experience. And then you also don't have to, you don't get to have, oh, it's August, there's nothing to do. And then your mind's like, here's something we could do. And hopefully it's not, you know, I grew up in Brooklyn, we did some bad things, but hopefully you come up with something really creative. But maybe you could talk a little bit about, since we're going there, what you hope to achieve in terms of maybe, you know, those aspects that we're losing, and maybe even talk, I don't know, do you have kids?
Yeah, I do. And it was a big part of me thinking about starting something like this.
So let's unpack
watching
that.
Them.
When you see your kids and they're just like, give me my heroin, I'm sorry, iPad. And like, you know, you take the iPad away from them and they just literally act like a junkie who has been locked up in for 48 hours. Like,
That's
it's amazing. These kids like, a temper tantrum like you've never seen if they lose their device for 2 days.
So a couple things come to mind here. One, you know, when my six-year-old, six and four are my kids, right? When my six-year-old says, hey, Dad, I'm bored. I'm like, good. Just sit there. Be bored. And you know what he does? It's, you know, within a few minutes, he's making up worlds or building something new. It's like, you know, you just let them be bored. I mean, maybe this is maybe a little bit beyond the scope of what we're talking about today, but I'm with you. Let the kids be bored sometimes. And one of the touchstones we talk about at the company is trying to get people who, you know, didn't grow up with the iPads and whatnot, get back to that kid under a blanket with a flashlight kind of reading, you know, where you get lost in that. That is one of our touchstones, is like helping people get lost in a book again, a really good book. And so then to your point about the device and whatnot, I like to talk about, you know, Steve Jobs in the early 80s, he took out this spread in Scientific American talking about the personal computer as the bicycle for the mind. Right. And that was his vision for what, you know, this type of technology should do. And it was reported after he died, it was reported that before he died, he said, we don't allow the iPad in the house because we're afraid of what it's going to do to the kids.
Yes.
So in these 30 years, we went from this beautiful vision of what personal computing devices can do for us to, I don't want my kids to touch it. And so I do think that for me, there's, you know, and we'll see where we go beyond just reading in the, you know, years, assuming we're successful with this, you know, first product, but, tapping back into that beautiful vision of the bicycle for the mind, or sometimes say the Peloton for the mind in the, in the modern era, so that people can do what's right for themselves mentally. And again, to the discipline point, you're not going to get people to give up the heroin unless you give them something else and something better. And so that's why it's a replacement strategy. It's like, make a new habit with the soul reader.
What's that?
And that will get you to read more, and that'll be better for your mental
health.
What's
the thing they give people, that little, like little thing they can sip and drink? I had to get them off heroin. I forgot what it's called.
Oh yeah. I know what you're referring to.
It'll come to us in a second.
Name. Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Methadone.
So yeah,
Methadone. Yeah. You give them a little methadone.
That's right. And I put it, so I put it on my nightstand instead of my iPhone. And for example, when I first,
That it's on your nightstand instead of your iPhone, because if you put this on, correct me if I'm wrong, the e-ink technology that you're using, I think it's e-ink they call it.
Yes, that's right. E-ink or e-paper.
E-paper. It's not as stimulating, correct?
Right. Now we have to, because we're putting it in the glasses, we do light it. But the lighting itself is much more like what your phone is on when you put it in night mode, and it's in that very reduced blue light mode. Yeah. So that's, you know, we all get drowsy while we're reading with the device on.
It is the same.
Yeah, it is it's a very warm kind of light that is pleasing to the eyes, kind of, you know, the right for night. And an interesting thing happened when I did that switch. You know, I sometimes I check my screen time when I'm, you know, feeling a little masochistic.
God, it's so embarrassing, right? It's like so shameful. This is like, if we should force adults and the entire family should be forced to publish their screen time in the kitchen. And like, just as a group, we have a collective number of minutes we can do as a group or something.
Right. Right. Yeah. No, I think this would be good. Yeah. But here's the interesting thing that happened to me is I was in the like 5 to 6 hour a day territory before reading with Soul Reader. Not amazing, but not so bad.
Embarrassing, but not tragic.
That's right. But I'm willing to mention it on a podcast.
Yeah. And that means he's really at 7 or 8, but yeah.
Yeah. Could be.
I'm at like 4 or 5 now. I'm like, just, you know, I'm doing a little bit better than you.
There you go.
We're both
there
at 10.
There you go. Here's what happened though. I got the iPhone off the nightstand, a little bit less, you know, doom scrolling on Twitter, a little bit less binge watching.
Yep.
And I read, I would average probably reading about 30 to 60 minutes a day and kind of depending on how interesting the novel was I was reading or the news of the day or whatnot. So you'd think, oh, okay, well, screen time must have gone down 1 hour because you were reading 1 hour a day, right?
Yeah. Swap it out.
No. Screen time went down 2.5 hours a day.
Oh, wow. Why is that?
Why is that,
Jason? You went to bed quicker.
I went to bed sooner. I didn't kind of get stuck in that thing. Yeah. So I kind of magically found either I got to sleep a little bit longer or better, or I kind of found an extra hour and a half a day that I wasn't like this, you know, staring at my phone.
Here's
in
the
my
thing
hand.
With like getting rid of screen time. I find with my kids. So when we're at the ski house and we're, you know, having ski days, I say, listen, screens happen after dinner.
Yeah.
And if you're out on the mountain, you get in a little bit early. We'll make an exception and you go to the movie there and watch a movie, or you can use your devices a little bit. But basically what I find is like, if no device, then activities. But then an interesting thing happens as well. My theory on why these kids are getting so weird, and adults, let's face it, we've all got friends who are getting weird. They can't make eye contact anymore. They get socially awkward. They don't know how to communicate. And then you have incels and just weird kids. Credit to Sherry Turkle on this, but there's just like thought that like, hey, because we're connecting with so many people all day long, whether it's on social networks and email and Slack, that we're like hyper connected, but you're not getting face to face time with people. You're not hearing their voice. And so the social connections are not real. But we feel like we're being socially connected. In fact, we feel like we're overly socially connected.
Yep.
What happens in boredom, my theory is, that you become more introspective. You're in your own mind. You start thinking about yourself. And you also become more interested and inquisitive, like that Ted Lasso speech when he plays darts. You ever see that speech? When, you know what I'm talking about or no? Have you heard this speech?
I think so.
He gives a speech. It's a really great speech where the guy challenges him to darts. And he basically just, the guy was never interested enough in him to ask him if he'd ever played darts before. And then if he had been a little bit more inquisitive or interesting, he would have known that his dad would take him to the bar every Sunday afternoon to play darts since he was like 12 years old. And then he hits like 3 bullseyes in a row.
Yeah,
and it's just like epic. But you weren't interested enough. You weren't inquisitive enough. And you will become more interested in other people when you're in person. You will become more interested when your device is put in thing. That's why I love a game I play with my friends when we go to dinner, which is stack the phones. Stack the phones. And then whoever picks it up first, if you play this game, has to do dinner.
But
you stack
like
your phones at dinner.
Yep.
I try this at your next dinner, everybody.
And
listening.
You can reach for it anytime, I assume, right?
You're allowed to go for it. Whoever goes for it first pays for dinner. It's f-ing brilliant.
That's great.
And then the other good thing is I, you know, got some famous friends and go to parties where they collect the phones on the way in. No phone parties where they put your phone in a bag. Also amazing. So if you ever have a party, ask everybody to put their phones at the front. Hey, listen, if you're a parent and you need to check on your kid, just go out to the driveway and you do this. So a lot of the parties I've been going to where there might be celebrities at it or other high profile people, they might just be like, hey, collect the phones. And I think this is like really great that you're taking your time to do this. Whether it succeeds or fails, we'll see in the market. I think
of course.
It's guaranteed to have a level of success with bookworms, but I think you want to go a little further than that. So. Okay, listen, if you're running a sales team, you got a design agency, you got a media business, you know the hassle of one pagers, right? They never format correctly on mobile. You can't track them properly. It's a complete mess. I have worked in the media business for many years, 3 decades. In fact, I'm getting old. And nobody had figured this out until now. You have to check out Issue. It's issuu.com. Issue is the all-in-one platform for you to create and distribute beautiful digital content. It's not just one-pagers. Those are important, of course, but you can create marketing materials, magazines, catalogs, portfolios, and so much more. Beautiful, evocative collateral to help you sell your product or service, but it also comes with amazing analytics that you can just pop up on a dashboard, and you're going to track the reads, the total time spent, device breakdown. Are they watching it on their iPad, their phone? It also works seamlessly with tools like Canva, Dropbox, MailChimp, and InDesign. Having a trackable magazine, if you want to level up your marketing needs, you need to use Issue. So get started for free or get 50% off an annual premium plan at issue.com/podcast and use the promo code TWIST. That's ISSUU.com/podcast and use that promo code TWIST so they know I sent you for your free starter account or 50% off an annual premium plan. How's the beta testing going? What's the feedback been to people who've read a book or two on it, right? So how many people have read two or three books on it?
A few dozen at this
point. A few dozen. And what are they? I mean, you must have done some, do you do listening labs with them, or how do you get information from them?
Yeah. A lot of calls and whatnot. The two anecdotes come to mind that are, maybe I'll do three. The first one is people are surprised at how well it works and how quickly it works with respect to this mindset shift. And they're like, oh, I didn't like, it's hard to imagine what it's like to put on a wearable e-reader because it's a new category. So yeah, there's a bit of that surprise and then kind of, oh, right. Okay. It actually works. And that's the first helpful piece of feedback is like, we're on the right track with the new category. Another one is one person put it on and they reported back. They said, I woke up early the first morning I had it. I put it on. I didn't think about the clock and I read for 2.5 hours. And I can't remember the last time I read for 2.5 hours straight.
Wow.
And so to me, like this point about being immersed in something.
So the duration matters,
Yeah. You know, they kind of got lost in what they were reading. And even just because this person was reading in bed and their reflection was, oh, if I had picked up a book, I might have shifted around a little bit as you do when you're reading in bed.
Yeah, you try to work out the
Arm strain, neck strain, whatever.
I didn't even think
whatever.
About that. Arm strain.
Yeah, it's all that stuff. No back problems, no neck problems when reading this way. And then the other big piece of feedback that we got from a person a couple of days after they started is he literally said, I think this is a 10x improvement on reading for me. And for him, he's like, I felt the loss of optionality, meaning it got rid of my options. I felt the loss of optionality almost instantly within a few minutes. And so those are kind of what we're keying into on whatnot. And you know, then there's all the kind of normal user feedback in terms of, oh, okay, we got the mobile app. We think of the sole reader as your nightstand. You're going to have a few books on there. You're going to have the day's articles, your mobile device, your computer. That's your full library. That's how you're going to, you know, curate content and decide what you're going to read next and all that. So a lot of the usual user feedback on how those interactions should work and, you know, how easy it is to sync the content, all that stuff. But those are some of the highlights of the feedback.
I think, you know, my friend Doug Rushkoff, who is a media author, I don't know if you've ever read any of his books, but he had this theory with MTV and the internet and video games that there was ADHD exists in his mind. People debate that because I think you're Gen X too. A lot of people didn't have it and then now everybody's got it. And
I think
there's situational ADHD, which is... you have to defend yourself against the onslaught of incoming, notifications, as we call it now. But it could have been MTV when we were kids, which was, just moved quicker, right? You watch a 3-minute video and the video had so many cutscenes in it. Now you look at TikTok. ADHD is like a defense mechanism, right? You throw it up, but then it has all these like downstream effects. So there's something that could be very healthy about this in terms of just giving your mind a break. I think it's really amazing what you've set out to do. So I'm glad you're doing it. I'm going to buy
it. Thank you. Great.
Are you hiring right now or are you just in sales mode? You got a full complement team? Or if you're hiring, I'd love to give a shout out if you've got any open positions for people who might want to apply to work on such a noble mission.
Yeah, well, appreciate that. You know, it, like a startup, we're always hiring the best people we can find. But also we're still a small, young team. So we're very much looking for startup generalists, technically competent people who can cross over a lot of different stuff. So, appreciate a shout out that you're willing
and
to give.
The website is?
Soulreader.com.
Soulreader.
Soulreader.com.
Yeah. And it'll ask you to put your phone number in. Interestingly, not email.
Yes.
So phone number. I like that early choice
tip,
for growth.
Early tip we got, it does communicate a little bit more seriousness, which we like. But also, then we don't have to worry about the spam bots as much. It's really tough to get an email into somebody. You lose a lot of waitlist traffic. That's something we learned from some of our advisors and mentors pretty early on the consumer hardware thing. So
yeah,
name and phone number. Get yourself on the waitlist.
Get on the waitlist. And thank you for including me in the beta test. That's incredibly generous. I know you only had 30, 40 spots to include me. I'm not even an investor. What a great gift. No, I'm excited. I signed up and I will be one of the first to buy it. And go take a look at it. If you listen to the audio, comes with a couple different colors. I like the gold myself.
It's a good thing.
Can't wait to see these in the wild. They're good looking. Just as I let you go, what did you think of the Apple product?
Ah, yeah. So
first impressions. You haven't used it yet, I assume.
No, I have not. I haven't had the chance. First impressions is we love kind of what they have validated, because it's been part of our message for years now, which is general, face tech. They call it spatial computing. I'll just say general face tech, AR, VR, whatever. General face tech. It's really hard. It's hard computationally. It's hard from a weight perspective. It's hard from a battery life perspective.
Yes.
And the most resourced tech company in the world in terms of who could go after this just showed us exactly what it takes. It's big goggles. It's tethered. There's an external battery pack.
Yeah.
By the way, it costs $3,500.
Yeah.
Right.
Add a zero to the Soul Reader.
Add a 10x, right? And yet we're still left with the question: do I want an iPhone on my face?
Yes.
I don't know if we do. I don't.
I do. I'll tell you what I want. I want to be in a hotel or in a plane or in a cafe and have my full desktop, while not feeling like somebody's going to murder me and I don't see them coming.
Sure.
I want to be safe and I want to see that virtual desktop. But I think we're. What do you think? Three generations? You think be three revisions, like maybe three cycles of 18 months before it gets down to under 1,000 or 1,000 where you can, and the battery is smaller, or you think it's longer?
Boy, it's a really hard problem because,
what's the hardest problem? Yeah, okay.
Well, it depends on what you want. If you want the existing form factor with the tether and the battery, probably a few generations and they get that to $1,000. Mm. If you want it to look like this, and I'm holding my glasses for you listeners, if you want it to look like this, we're still really far away from that. So, how many
years? I think you put it at 20, 10, something between those 10, two?
10 plus.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so we think that like this kind of, if we constrain on the weight and the battery life first and, kind of add a lot of value there. And you mentioned it, we're going to get avid readers to like this, but we're also going after aspirational readers. Everybody who at the end of the year says, next year, I want to read more books.
Yeah.
This is the perfect thing for them. And that will help us, carve our own way to this more, maybe general purpose, but focus purpose tech.
This is why Amazon needs to do a deal with you, because I think you could sell this with 10 books. I think people will buy this for $700 with 10 books included, or a New York Times subscription, the bundling. Because I buy the Platinum Audible, which I think is 20 credits or 25 credits, and I spend $200 a year, and I've had it for 10 years. So I've spent $2,000 on audiobooks, and I like, because I think one audiobook, if I get one idea out of one audiobook on a business basis, it's going to be worth hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of dollars.
Sure.
10 years, 200 audiobooks is $2,000. Like, are you kidding me? It's the greatest deal in the world. And that's, I think, when you pitch these, like pitching, what if you get that knowledge, that one nugget of knowledge that then as an entrepreneur, but I love your approach. So that means like gym memberships, December, January is going to be your big New Year's resolution. I love it. Are you a previous marketer? You seem to have a good marketer head.
No, but I've been thinking about it a lot. And my first startup, I was in tech and then moved quickly over to sales and marketing because I just found a love for the storytelling aspect of building
Isn't
businesses.
It great?
Yeah. So it is great.
Well, I can tell that you have the storyteller thing, because when you go to the website, it feels like an Apple product, and the way you speak about it is just like, you really understand your customer. Just the tagline on your website, just to, rate my landing page, experience the next evolution in reading. Mm-hmm. The fact that it's an experience, and that it's an evolution, and it's only reading, right? Like this, whoever wrote this copy, somebody suffered over that sentence, I can tell, and it's probably you.
And some of our great team,
Of your team. But the fact that reading could evolve is a very evocative statement that makes you say, how is it evolving? And I want the answer to that. Mm-hmm. And immediately under that, you get to click learn more.
That's right.
You know, it's like a very well done. So shout out to the Soul Reader marketing team. Really well done. All right. Listen, loved meeting you. I hope you sell a million of these things. Well done.
Thank you, Jason. Really appreciate it. We hope so too.
Listen, all you got to do is sell 10,000 of these and you're still in business, right? That's, I think the mark is if you sell 10,000 of these years at 350, if you make $1.50 off of them, you'll be fine as a company. You'll survive. And that's, you know, in the hardware business, surviving those first couple of years as you figure it out is the most important. So I wish you continued success and we'll see you all next time on This Week in Startups. Bye-bye.